Welcome, welcome back to ArtCast. I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, bringing you more architecture information. Have you ever thought about where did we get architects from anyway? You know, because people built buildings for thousands of years, some very beautiful and complex buildings. I mean, think about the Colosseum in Rome, the pyramids, the Parthenon, the great cathedrals of Europe. These were architectural masterpieces. But did you know that the profession of architect for buildings did not exist until 1857 when a group of guys got together and said, we're going to make it official. And now you have to be licensed to do architecture work and all that kind of stuff. Well, there's some folks who'd like to see the same thing happen in the world of software. We're a long ways away from that. But today we have Paul Price, who is the president of ISA. So let's welcome Paul Price.
We are here, and it's kind of funny that we're finally getting around to this here, because I've run into you a number of places in the U.S. I think, didn't we had dinner at a place there in Austin, a barbecue place, last
we did.
August?
We did, actually. That's
yeah.
I came up and bugged you after your talk, to the, the .NET group there.
Yeah, there was an architect council.
It was the Architect Council, Austin. That's what it was, yes.
Yeah. And they served barbecue on wax paper.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And it was very good.
Great place, Rudy's.
That's
right. Right down the street from my house, actually.
Oh, so you live there in Austin?
I lived there in Austin for now.
Ah, okay.
Probably moving soon, but I've been in Austin for some time.
Well, I like Austin.
Yeah, it's a fun town.
Great music
in
Austin, and good barbecue, so gotta love that. Now, your claim to fame is ISA. So what is ISA?
ISA is an acronym for the International Association of Software Architects. The software part being an invention when we were very small, meaning that it's actually an association for all IT architects. So not whatever your interpretation of software architect is, it's actually for enterprise, infrastructure, business, anyone who has a significant interest in the architecture space. And it's your standard association. I mean, it's like in the U.S., the AMA, other countries have other associations, but we represent the professional first in the industry and try to provide them value for their membership.
Okay, so how does a guy get started in the... did you start this thing?
Or? I did. I founded it about 2.5 years ago.
So one day you're just sitting there thinking, I think I'm going to found an association.
Believe it or not, it was almost that instantaneous. But really what it was I was sitting there one day at the office. You know, I was an architect in Austin. I worked for Dell for a whole number of years in Japan and all over the world. But I was back with Dell after a sojourn in a whole bunch of other companies. And I was sitting there one day, and I went and talked to one of the other architects, and I said, let's start a user group about architecture.
Ah, okay.
And so we were originally called the Austin Software Architecture User Group. And that very quickly ballooned into a context that I had around the world saying, ooh, I'm interested in this idea. You know, what do you want? So we had a gentleman in Twin Cities where I had lived for a while. We had a person in San Francisco, etc. What are you doing with this user group? This is a really neat idea. And so I sat down one night and essentially said, this is a bigger deal. And we could potentially solve some real problems in the profession, and laid out a charter, a vision that's still online today. And then took that to a number of architects in Austin, Roger Sessions, who I believe you've interviewed before,
yeah, uh-huh.
And a number of other contacts that I have from around the world, and put together a board and a business plan and registered as a company, and we were no longer a user group, we were an international association.
Wow, that's pretty amazing, because, when I think about... One of the problems that architects have had about building a community is that we're kind of few and far between.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you go to your local town, you know, a lot of towns of any size will have a .NET user group. And you might go there, but they're going to be mostly developers talking about, here's the cool latest little ASP.NET user control thing or something like that, right. You know, and well, that's kind of interesting, but it's not really focused on architecture.
No, at some point you essentially run out of time going to so many user groups. So, you know, I did the, because I have no technology bias personally. I've done work in deep work in the Microsoft stack and deep work in the J2 stack. And, well, quite frankly, I just got really tired of going to the .NET user group, the XML user group, the Java user group, the project management user group to get that little bitty slice that was relevant to my architecture practice.
Okay, and so,
well,
so and,
I wanted something and, for me.
And actually, you're
selfish.
Touching on part of the problem is that, you know, what is the architecture profession anyway?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, a lot of people who wear that label got it because, oh, you know, Joe's the architect. Well, why? Well, because he's been here 12 years. That's why he's the architect.
I call it the where developers go to die syndrome.
Yeah, it's like he's too old to write code anymore, so we just let him draw squares on the board.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, we've put Joe over there now, and he's very valuable to the company.
Yeah, right.
That's what we keep telling Joe. So we do see some of that, but the other problem, I mean, the problem that's actually embedted in that statement. That's kind of hard to discern is how do you tell the difference between Joe and Mary Grimes, who is an unbelievably astute, powerful, practical architect of some type, so a software architect. How do you tell the difference? And the answer, right, that we've come up with is, you can, but only personally. Mm-hmm. You can't make an objective differentiation between the two. Right? So some of the questions we get about is, why is membership in the ISA open to anyone who's interested in architecture? Why aren't there criteria? And the answer is because the part of the vision is we've got to get all the people who even call themselves architects together before we'll be able to start to tell the difference between the ones that are really great and the ones that are there because they were, you know, there was no place else for them to go.
Well, it's interesting when you think about other professions, like, you know, when you talked about the association kind of forming, I immediately thought of a bar association, right?
That's exactly right.
Well, you got lawyers, right? But we know who's a lawyer and who isn't. Right, there's a very specific process you have to go through to become one.
Mm-hmm.
And same with the medical association. We know who's a doctor and who isn't. That's not to say that they're all great. I mean, certainly there's lousy lawyers and doctors, and,
right.
And there's good ones, too. But at least we know who's in that group and who's not. But it's often very difficult to tell for the architect profession.
Do you know how? Why that is, though?
Well, no, educate me.
Sorry. Well, obviously, being an architect, right? I like to do as little work as absolutely necessary to get the most bang for the buck, right?
Okay.
To get competitive advantage.
So that's a very positive way of describing yourself as lazy. I like that.
Absolutely. Which I was going to say lazy, but, you know, I actually somebody told me not to say lazy.
Okay,
so
good.
So I came up with a really fun way to say it. But I am a lazy architect.
Okay, good.
I want to work as little as possible and make as much money as possible, providing value to my company. I like the problem first, but I like the benefits too.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing, and I'll use the AIA for it, as an example, which is the Association for Building Architects, and it's the American Institute of Architecture. And the interesting thing is, if you go to their website and look at their history, they were founded in 1859, but I'm probably getting the date wrong. It's essentially the mid-late 1800s. And the story is, 12 guys got together because they were tired of everybody using the term architect, regardless of whether they were a construction worker or a pipe layer or a real architect. And
yeah.
And so the history of these other well-known, well-respected professions is exactly the same as what we've done. And what we did is not duplicate and not reinvent. I actually like to say we're not doing anything really conceptually special. What we're doing is something that has worked forever. You know, 1300s, in the 1300s, 13th century, there were guilds for almost all professions that ultimately became professional associations for doctors and, well, back then there were apothecaries, but that, you know, ultimately became chemists, etc.
Well, and there's a lot of value in that, right? In that, now if I want to get a lawyer, right, I'm going to go, you know, look at the Bar Association and mm-hmm. they can help me find a lawyer or whatever, right? So I know I'm not just getting somebody who went to one of the diploma mills.
Right, exactly.
You can get a diploma for just about anything. I get in my email all the time, you know, and I've actually considered, wouldn't that be kind of fun, you know, to get one of those and just hang it up on your wall? I've been thinking about doing that.
Let me know if you get one for a building architect, because I just like something that, like a diploma, I'm a building architect as well.
Yeah, right.
Kind of fun, right? You know, I'm going to look for as many different architect diplomas as I can get. And
I think that would be great.
I think that'd be kind of cool.
But anyway, I think it's interesting, as I was thinking about the timing of the building architects kind of forming this association, it occurred to me that this timing was also an artifact of the Industrial Revolution happening about that time. Mm-hmm. You know, so prior to that time, you could be a guy who builds log cabins, you know, mm-hmm. and all you need is an axe, you know, and you go, eh, that looks about right, you know, they're going to slap up some wood there, it's good enough, right? But then when the Industrial Revolution happened, people started building bigger buildings where the risk was much greater if there was structural failure, mm-hmm. That you needed to have some certainty that the person who was designing it knew what they were doing. And then it became really critical that this profession emerged. It seemed to me that we're kind of in the same cycle with IT and architecture, in that, well, it's been around for a while, but maybe we've been kind of in the log cabin phase, where there's been a lot of those, well, that's good enough, you know, slap some website out there. But we're entering a phase where that's not good enough anymore.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, the term was originally coined, I believe, it was either Parnas or Dijkstra, and this is like 67-something-ish, right, way back when. And it's been floating around, and there's been architects for a long time. But I essentially have a theory, it's my own little working theory that I have no proof for, but that the last 3 years, the bubble bursting, essentially has put a focus on the skill set of the architect, because what was the CFO and the CIO's mandate to IT at that point was, use what you got because we ain't buying nothing else, right? Spoken like a Texan. But basically, figure out what we have and maximize that, right? Because we don't have any money anymore to go buy the new thing. And what happened, I believe, and it happened in to me as well, is that people went in and said, we have all this stuff. All we have to do is connect it a little better, and it will work a lot better. And they started thinking about technology strategically. So that's one side of it. The other side is our buildings are just getting a lot bigger. You know, Pat Helen talks about city planning. That's where we're at. We're at this, I need to look at my enterprise as a logical platform, a, you know, 700 pieces of software that all form something of a topology, you know, this big, complex thing that's very deep. And architects are looking at this going, how can I make my company more money with all these things in here and doing the strategic projects, not just whatever comes up on the next project list, actually working in a partnership with the business to find new ways of making more money, because IT is so much a component of every business now.
You know, it's funny, as I think back to the 90s, 90s were kind of the decade of the developer, right? I mean, and I was a developer in Silicon Valley, man. It was good business. I'm telling you, my phone was ringing like every other day, you know, and would you come over here? And this company was, down the road was like, we'll give you a free BMW if you just come and work here, you know?
Really?
It was incredible.
Wow.
I mean, it was a lease. Okay?
I managed to dodge that bullet.
Just about the time that I joined Microsoft, I went and I was kind of split between, you know, should I go to one of these dot-coms, you know, which in 99, dot-coms were looking pretty good, right? And as I interviewed at a bunch of them, you know what I found is that they had put together with bubblegum and baling wire the most ridiculous piece of thing that they could get up quickly. You know, whatever website they could get so they could get their next round of VC funding and prepare for the IPO. And this a whole strategy was, we're just going to slap something up that barely works. When we get to the IPO, it won't matter. Mm-hmm. And then we'll redo the whole thing. But there was absolutely no architecture in right. there at all. There right. was no, it, you know, rip and replace, it didn't matter. Because the money was plentiful. Mm-hmm. And we were going to fix it all in the next round. And as I looked at that, I just said, I don't think I want to do that. So thankfully, I didn't go that route because, interestingly enough, all the companies I had interviewed with all tanked badly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all those shares they were promising me would have been worth nothing anyway. So it was a good move. But it's funny to see how the situation has shifted. And today, if you're just a pure developer, you're probably a little bit worried about competing with the vast pool of very skilled developers in Asia.
Yes.
So a lot of those guys are saying, no, I'm an architect now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's always a concern. Economically, water flows downhill. You know, I mean, we've seen it in other professions, et cetera. And the outsourcing question is bigger than IT. I mean, it's constantly something that occurs in economies as they grow, and they push costs out to places where it's just cheaper to run them. But there's a quality component to that too. And you know, I started the ISA for a few personal, basically a few personal, professional/personal reasons. But I didn't do it to put developers out of business. I did it to actually empower the development community so that there would be less confusion about what they're good at and what architects are good at. Because we're really, quite frankly, good at different things. A good architect works as a peer. I mean, if they're working with a team, right? So there's levels of architecture. But a good software architect or project-level architect works as a peer with this team, not in a top-down, necessarily in a top-down manner, right? Being a good architect doesn't take away from being a great developer. I'm a terrible code writer, and I know I'm saying this on tape, but I write terrible code. It's not necessarily buggy. It's just it's not what I get excited about, right? It's not what I don't get excited about making my code the most perfect code ever. I get excited about business value, right? I get excited about how much money is my company going to make because that code is in place. And so, quite frankly, I want to empower the development community by starting this, because then we can essentially say, write better, you know, lift the developer role up as well to be on par with the architect role, because they're just good at different stuff. And right now there's just a huge amount of overlap, a whole bunch of confusion about when do you stop being a developer and start being an architect. And that's one of the problems that we're working on at the ISA. And when I say we, I don't mean some big company, I mean our members, right? Thousands of architects worldwide. That is the ISA. There isn't a big company behind it. It's actually a small company with a big impact.
Okay, so if people are out there going, all right, never heard of ISA before, but mm-hmm. it sounds interesting. So what is it? I mean, is it like a website? Is there a local group I go meet with? Where do I sign up? Right. What do I get if I sign up?
Well, the website is www.iasahome.org. It is a website, and to sign up to become a registered member right now, again, we're inviting all IT architects or people interested in architecture to join right now, and it's free. You can go to the website. You can join up. That'll get you access to content, newsletters, you know, et cetera. It's a journal kind of content, et cetera. Discounts, lots of little, what I call feature lists, right? The benefit, the checkmarkable benefits. The other component of the ISA is a local presence. So one of the frustrating parts about being an architect is that you're too busy to really participate in these global organizations. So one of our principles is think globally, but act locally. So we have
Seems like I've heard that before.
Yeah, it's an economic principle first, okay. But also right. it's a tagline. It's something I put on everything. Right?
All right, right.
Because it's so important to our message. It's so important that architecture... The architecture community have a face. We don't work well right now in our current state of knowledge with abstract bodies 1,000 miles away. It's one of the reasons why previous attempts at associations for architects haven't really pulled it off. It's because they never really invested in that local chapter infrastructure. So we have chapters, we have about 50 now, we have chapters all over the world. And I guess we're on every continent except for Antarctica now.
And we're looking for that one to start soon.
I think Roger Sessions said as soon as we land a vehicle on Mars, I'll be setting up a chapter there. Which we've already landed the vehicle, but as soon as we land a person.
Yeah, there you go.
The chapter infrastructure is the most important part. And actually, if you look online, you'll see a part of this. But our vision and structure is completely based on the local chapter. They have an immediate representation in all of the strategic moves of the ISA. It's a representative kind of organization where the chapter president and leadership really help us guide the overall direction of the organization. So what you get then is an equalization of... Or a normalization of the needs of architects from all over the world in the services that we provide. So sometimes I say, it's not so much what ISA can do for you, it's what you can do for the architecture community.
Because ask not what you can do for ISA.
Meaning that we're there to provide you value. I also like to say we're the only organization in the world that is going to hire a marketing and PR, or has hired a marketing and PR person just to make you more successful, just to make you look good in the industry. But the other thing is you've got to get back involved with us and tell us what you need. If you don't contribute, we can't give you value.
Well, and I think it is great because there are many communities for developers. Both at the local level and the online level, but it's been... Architects have kind of been isolated out in their own little world, you know, kind of on the edge of developer things and, you know, trying to find their niche. And I know a lot of people just want to get good information from their peers. You know, how did you handle these situations in your work? And the face-to-face component is really important, isn't it?
Yeah, we essentially call it our knowledge sharing component, right? And it includes a lot of programs, but one of them is just get together with other architects. Maybe you do it at a bar, maybe you do an official meeting, a lot of different types of meetings and networking and those kinds of things. But the fundamental value there is you get together with other people who have the same problems you do as an architect, peer-to-peer. And you know, a lot of people ask, well, you let anybody in, so you're obviously going to have a lot of members that aren't really architects. And the answer is, yeah, but they filter each other automatically, right? Like, it's oil and water, right? I've been at ISA meetings all over the world, and they're all the same.
Yeah.
Right? There's plenty of people there that are honestly learning, and they ask very astute questions, even though they may be just aspiring architects. And then there's always a few people there that you know, not always.
That are passing around their resume.
Yeah, but there's always that leadership there, right? Yeah. That we've done it before, and we're looking to go to our next level. So it's this kind of automatically filtering network where you get information at your level, but you also get access to people of the next level. And where else can you say that? I mean, most of the organizations I worked at, if they had architects at all, they certainly didn't have architects that I could go mentor with. I had to move halfway around the world to find a mentor. If we make these chapters as empowered as possible, you'll be able to go to one place, no matter what city you go to, and find your peers and find your betters, so that you can improve your practice.
Okay, so now the funding of all this, now you said I could sign up as a member of ISA for free.
You certainly can.
Now that's quite a contrast, because I heard about a previous organization where you had to like send off $75 or something and you would get a certificate to hang on your wall, and that was about it.
No, I didn't even get my certificate.
Really?
I paid my membership. Yeah, I didn't, you know, I really didn't want to go out and I want to do art. I've always wanted to be an architect.
Yeah.
Ever since I heard the word. And I really didn't want to found an organization originally to do all that. So I went out and joined that organization, and we won't name them. But I went out and joined that organization, and I got two emails. I got one that was an empty digest of an empty newsletter, and one that was a request to renew my membership, and that was it. And I paid my
$75.
And that is when I said, I've got to go. It looks like I have to go do this. That something has to happen here.
Okay, but so to make this work, you actually came to us, to Microsoft, and to IBM and some others.
You know, and
well,
I want to say that there's a perception, especially in the J2 community, and I've done a huge amount of J2, okay? Mm-hmm. So I am not biased, and IBM's a sponsor, Oracle as well, but there's a perception in the community that .NET architecture, you know, really big projects, and these really big architectures, you know, they don't know how to think about architecture in some cases. And you know, the interesting thing is Microsoft, not just Microsoft, more importantly, the .NET community has responded to this message, to the message of ISA, of get together and talk about architecture like gangbusters.
Yeah,
they're almost always first to the chapter, right?
Uh-huh.
First to pick up the phone. I'm a .NET architect. Can I start a chapter in Brazil? I had one from Colombia the other day as well, and
cool.
I was like, very cool. But the interesting thing was that you know, the sponsorship arrangements, Microsoft has been absolutely, I don't want to say too many glowing things, because then it sounds like I'm sucking up. But the truth is, I've worked with the architecture strategy team over there. I started with Harry Pearson, and those guys over there have been so supportive of the organization and said, "What do you need? What kind of support do you need? We don't have any agenda. Just we want to see an organization like you exist." And I just, the vision of that was something that has taken some other organizations some time to see. So that's one side of it. I just wanted to kind of give a shout out, if you will.
Oh,
but
okay.
The other part is that yes, we do take vendor money, because we do take vendor representatives for a very specific reason. And I struggled with this for a long time, because very few associations take money from their vendor community, right? The AIA doesn't take money from sponsorship. And then I realized that architects have special needs. IT architects have special needs. You know, concrete doesn't change very often.
Right.
But our fundamental building materials do. So we have this special information need that we really can't do without a partnership with the vendor and services community. Right. What you create, are our raw materials for value. So that's one reason why we have a presence for that community, but that doesn't necessarily require funding. The second one is that the sponsor perspective helps us build this community, right, first. It's a chicken and egg problem. You can't charge membership until you have value, otherwise you end up like that other organization.
Right, right.
But you can't just take sponsor money, because then you end up as an industry vendor consortium. So what we've done is we've created a balanced model where sponsors, whether they be corporate IT, services, or vendor, actually have a relationship with individual architects. It's a feedback loop. And this is how we create that seat at the table for the individual architect, is we've created a system where we can utilize some of the money from sponsorship to help build that community. But then in exchange for that, as an architect, you get to influence those organizations yourself. Your agenda could be, as an architect, your agenda could be the agenda of the ISA in those services organizations, vendor organizations, et cetera. So it's really like a handshake. It goes both ways.
Okay.
So that's the model.
Very cool. Well, I think this is the kind of thing that, you know, people who are architects or want to be an architect definitely should get involved in, and we wholeheartedly support you guys, and I actually look forward to I've never been to an ISA meeting, so I'm going to have to go one of these days.
You should definitely go. They're all over the world.
And I'm all over the world, too.
Yeah, so pretty much, you know.
So we'll have to run across one. Thanks so much, Paul, for joining me today on ArtCast.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right. Paul Price, ladies and gentlemen, president of ISA. Yeah, you know, they have an interesting group, and it's a great way to kind of learn the profession, to get together with some of your fellow architects at one of those ISA meetings that they have, and you can look at their website and learn more about what ISA is and what they do and how you can take advantage. I think it's a good positive move, right, for us to get together and define what makes an architect. Because, you know, we can't just let anybody do this, or can we? I don't know. At least as long as they let me do it, okay? Hey, we'll see you next time on ArtCast.